It's Living on Earth. I'm Steve Kerwood. It's daybreak in the far southwestern corner of Africa, a few hours' drive north of the Cape of Good Hope. We're in the wild lands and farming country known as the Succulent Karoo. The broad plateaus look like a desert, dotted with shrubs called fynbos, vast and bland, except when early spring rains ignite blooms of wildflowers. Like other parts of South Africa, there are many plants here found nowhere else in the world. Though with its biting winters and scorching summers, the semi-arid Karoo has a radically different climate from much of the rest of the country. Its unique location and size have attracted scientists looking for evidence of the local impact of global climate change. Farmers here grow grain like oats and barley and raise sheep. This is also the only place where the famous South African rooibos or redbush tea grows. This woody shrub looks much like the many other fynbos bushes, although a closer look reveals shiny, dark green leaves shaped much like the herb rosemary. Traditionally, the Khoisan, or Bushmen, brewed a bright reddish-orange tea from the rooibos leaves. Now, thanks to the smooth taste of the tea and its reputation as a promoter of health, the cultivation of rooibos is the biggest cash crop for many farmers here, including Koos Koopman.
I grow rooibos tea, and then I make a little bit of small fruit and a little bit of vegetables in the garden, like potatoes, carrots, cabbages, oranges, guavas. I don't plant vegetables for marketing. I want to do it, but I haven't got enough money yet to do that.
Koos Koopman grew up on this land as the son of a colored farmhand. In the days of apartheid, colored was a distinct classification different from white or black Africans. Koos's brown skin, almond-shaped eyes, and wiry build suggest he may well have some Khoisan ancestors. He moved away to the city of Cape Town for 3 decades, but a few years ago, after the end of apartheid, he came back to the area. By then, he and his brother Barry were in their 50s. They used government assistance to purchase this farm of more than 10 square miles from the white farmer who had once employed Koos and his father.
I was always thinking of this farm. And so about 2 years back, I come here one day and he tell me that he got problems. And as we sit here in front of the house, he asked me, Koos, I want to sell this farm now and I want you to buy the farm.
So you're all in this together. This is a family farm.
It's a family farm, yeah. Can we go to there? I want to see my pot quickly. I was busy to make some soup for us, for lunchtime. You know, that is the way I grow up, with my poultry at the outside. We bake our own bread. We make everything for ourselves, you know. We try to do so little as possible from the shops. And that's the only way you can survive on a farm.
What's in the pot?
It is my own beans.
No? Saving money is especially important when you have a new and high mortgage on your farm. And during the drought of 2003, things were very difficult for Koos. 40% to 70% of his rooibos plantings withered and died. Cultivated rooibos is his biggest source of cash, but there was a tiny bright spot. During the drought, the wild rooibos plants scattered among the brush on his land seemed to hold their own. Like every farmer, Koos knows there can be bad years, but he does feel the seasons are becoming less predictable. I asked him how they are changing.
Sometimes very hot, sometimes very cold. I'm not talking about the rain. Cold, and then snow, like a little snow. And that is drying, that burns the plants. And some of the things, when it's wet and the rain fall and it's very cold in the evening, during the evening, no? Mm-hmm. And during the day it gets very hot.
A few kilometers closer to town in Newitville, the family of Mariette and Willem van Wyk has been farming for 6 generations since their ancestors came from the Netherlands. Mariette van Wyk pours me a cup of the naturally caffeine-free rooibos tea and tells me that their operation has also been hit hard by the drought of 2003.
Well, for the past 10 years, we couldn't complain. And then last year came as a total surprise, being so dry. We had one major rain, but everything failed.
Usually they harvest 40 tons of rooibos in a year. In 2003, 80% of the crop failed. And when it became clear that the magnificent display of spring flowers was also not going to happen, it meant the tourists didn't come to the bed and breakfast the Van Wycks have run for almost two decades. And with nothing growing for forage, they could not afford much in the way of rations for their flock of 2,000 sheep. Parsing out what little grain they did have to the sheep and recently born lambs proved to be a heartbreaker for Mariette.
When they see the bucky or the pickup coming, they all run to that because they know it's food. In the commotion, every mother loses her lamb. So every morning you will find 20, maybe less, hopefully less, sheep or little lambs dead around that. And the first time my husband took me out with him, I felt like crawling under the bed when I came back. I just couldn't handle all those little dead bodies lying there. If we have good rains for the next 2 years, we hope to recover in about 2 to 3 years.
So let me ask you this. How much does it seem that the weather is outside the normal range of what it seems to have been all the years that your family's been farming here?
I am always careful to say this. People are talking a lot about they don't understand the weather any longer. And it's happening later and later that your winter clothes are coming out.
On the road along the front of the Zuid-Bakkeveld Mountains into the town center of Newitville, rows of cultivated rooibos look dusty and dry in the heat of what locals say should be a cool early winter day. Signs that this could be more than just the odd dry spell have attracted the interest of scientists at the Climate Systems Analysis Group at the University of Cape Town. The science involved is complicated, but the general scientific consensus is that the Earth is warming because of the widespread burning of coal, oil, and gas since the Industrial Revolution, as well as the cutting of vast amounts of forests. The El Niño weather pattern that seems to come more and more often with this warming tends to parch this corner of the planet.
One of the climate change projections is that there will be a longer-term drying out or a reduction for the kind of broader area, not just for the Zuid-Bakkeveld, but for interior South Africa.
Dr. Emma Archer is a geographer with the Climate Systems Analysis Group.
A second one which is quite worrying is that there may be an increase in the frequency of what we call dry spells. So a period without rain, which is critical for agriculture within a rainy season, we may be getting more of those. And most importantly, the broad projection, and something which the World Meteorological Organization actually put out a brief last year on which they agreed, whereas people may have been receiving rainfall within a certain range, around a normal value, it seems as though that variability will increase. And so more extreme precipitation events will be experienced.
Emma Archer is in Newitville to get the word out to local farmers that not only should they expect less rain, but they will also get it at different times than they're used to getting it, and it's time to start planning how to adapt. A few years ago, a group of rooibos farmers in the Newitville area organized themselves into the Haydel Cooperative with the help of the Environmental Monitoring Group, an advocacy agency. To boost income, they got their crop certified as organic and developed markets in Europe where the reputed health benefits of rooibos are prized. They are also working on strategies to cope with the effects of long-term drought. Noel Utley is program manager for the monitoring group.
The farmers are quite aware that the climate is getting tougher. That's their perception, and the data is certainly supporting a trend towards drier and more extreme climatic events. And there are a number of ways in which they can adapt their practice towards production which is less likely to be affected by climate.
Some growing techniques involve plowing in ways that conserve moisture and using other plants to block winds that promote drying. And the experience of Koos and other farmers with drought-tolerant wild rooibos is prompting some botanical research as to the feasibility of using the wild tea to help adapt to climate change. Rhoda Lowe is a graduate student in botany at the University of Cape Town who is conducting a study with farmers of the Haydel Cooperative.
We're looking at the sustainable harvesting of rooibos wild tea,
which is relatively slow growing, but Rhoda is looking to see if farmers could gather enough of it to make it economically worthwhile.
And we were looking particularly at the wild rooibos tea because it's a strong source of income for the people in the Zuid-Bakkeveld.
There could be advantages. The cultivated tea that farmers use now can be harvested every year, but it has to be replanted every few years at considerable expense. The wild variety only needs to be carefully harvested by hand where it's found, although it can only be cut every 2 years. Rhoda and Emma want to take me on a tour of Rhoda's experimental plots in Coos's wild rooibos fields, but first we decide to try a bit of research on our own, from the perspective of a consumer, me.
Would you like some sugar with your tea?
Oh, no, thank you. Just a little bit of milk.
If wild rooibos tea is to be successfully marketed, it will need to stand up to the flavor of the popular cultivated rooibos. So Noel, Rhoda, and Emma give me a taste test.
This is good. This is outstanding.
Steve, you get our wild man from the north of the water.
The cultivated tea is delicious, and the wild rooibos tastes great, with a sweet aftertaste like honey.
Come, 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 come.
We're back on the farm of Coos Koopman to see the wild rooibos tea plants that Rhoda Lowe is studying. But before we head for the fields, Coos stops to tend his flock of sheep. In case of drought, Coos says he's careful to limit the size of his flock. He wouldn't want them to overgraze and clean out his wild rooibos. He'd like to sell their meat as organic, but he hasn't found a market yet. Still, he foregoes hormones and antibiotics in favor of traditional herbs to treat any illnesses in the flock. As we wait to drive to the fields, botanist Rhoda Lowe explains how she'll use the data about wild rooibos she's gathering at the Koopman farm.
We're trying to marry the scientific knowledge with the indigenous knowledge, which there's a great body of, and trying to integrate that. And the final product will not be just the thesis, but also a harvesting manual that will come out of the research based on the results.
What are some of the indicators you're using for your study?
One of the research questions is what is the difference between the wild tea and the cultivar? To measure that, we're looking at the life cycles of the two and comparing them over time. Another experiment is we're trying to see which harvest season gives you the greatest regrowth after a year.
Climate researcher Emma Archer, Coos, and Rhoda point out some planted tea fields and various soil conditions on our way to the wild rooibos, and Rhoda does a bit of translating as Coos slips into Afrikaans.
Rhoda, you can follow what like this plant tea, no? Mak tea.
This is a cultivated tea on both sides.
This
tea is about 6 years old. Yeah. Now, if you look at this patch over here, on my left, now here you're going to get more moisture here than down below.
There's more rainfall here because it's higher, and you can see that.
That's only dope under plants in it.
But it's out of the vehicle to see the wild tea and more than just a short hike.
I'm going to take you to some of the sites, to some of the samples within the experiments here.
Rhoda has about 250 plants in her experiment. The tea bush branches are cut off by hand with a sickle, leaving enough behind so that it can keep growing. Farmers already know that the planted or cultivated rooibos might produce for less than a decade. The wild bushes have a longer productive life and can grow to be 50 years old. The wild tea is also more resistant to pests than its cultivated cousin, although the same pests go after both.
Can you move wild rooibos? Can you felt rooibos? Can you move the plant and replant it?
That is something I experience at the moment. I'm busy with it, Minerola, but it don't work.
As we walk through the brush to find the experimental plants, we see one that was harvested the previous year in April during the drought, and it's almost dead. Others fared a bit better, and then we come upon a particularly robust rooibos plant, and Rhoda flashes a big smile.
This is the July, one of the samples harvested in July.
So this is your most successful one from last year?
From what I'm seeing, this is the most successful.
What's the traditional time to cut this?
The traditional time is any time from February to April. So, but look at those ones who are cutting January, February, and until March. The experiments of that and the growing of that are much slower than the one of July. So that is thinking that something that I work on, maybe. But there's one thing, you can't dry the tea on July, man, because it needs sun, and that is in a rainy season, July. And we need sun, no rain, when we harvest the tea and make the tea.
So there are production factors that play a role in when tea gets harvested conventionally. But the tea, from what I'm seeing, the tea is responding to rain events, not season patterns, but rain patterns.
As we leave the experimental plot, the ironies sink in. Wild tea is more resilient than cultivated tea, but it does its best when it's harvested during the rainy season. Yet traditional methods of curing the tea must be used when there is no chance of rain. Like much good research, this study is raising as many questions as it is answering. For example, what cost-effective techniques could be used to process wild rooibos when it rains? And could timing the harvest according to the rains help the cultivated rooibos as well? Long-established farmers in the region, as well as people trying to get started like Koos, all share the changing climate of this place, and hopefully all can share in the benefits of the adaptation strategies that farmers as well as scientists develop in the coming season. Meanwhile, Koos is working toward a future that he hopes he can pass on to his children. And he's confident with his experience and faith and the findings of the researchers, he'll find a way to survive.
And we pray for the rain and come and see me in 5 years' time.
What happens if it doesn't rain?
I will never say that it doesn't. It won't rain. It will rain. God makes summer, winter, spring, and everything. You know, there's one thing that the farmer must have. He must never lose hope.
If there ever was a land of hope, South Africa must be it. More than a decade ago, this nation of 40 million people seemed headed for a racial meltdown. But that didn't happen. And Nelson Mandela, who grew up in the Transkei near the Wild Coast, went from political prisoner to president with remarkably little violence. The nation's fledgling democracy endures. And now South Africa faces the challenge of reconciling the urgent need of alleviating the poverty that plagues half its population with the critical mission of protecting its fragile ecosystems, from the karoo to the endangered pondo trees to the vanishing cheetahs. Democracy came here as all sides strove to forgive and find common ground. Perhaps South Africa can tap that legacy again, this time to find a common goal, to save its ecological riches and enrich all its citizens as it takes its place in the world economy. And for this week, that's Living on Earth. South Africa at a Crossroads was produced by Eileen Belinsky. We had help from Ingrid Lobet, Chris Ballman, Jenny Cecil Moore, Diana Schoberg, and Monica Wright. For photos and more from the Living on Earth Safari, please visit our website, livingonearth.org. That's livingonearth.org. Our program was mixed by Paul Wabrick in the Jennifer and Ted Stanley Studios at the World Media Foundation in Somerville, Massachusetts. Al Avery runs our website. Allison Dean composed our theme. I'm Steve Kerwin. Thanks for listening.
Funding for Living on Earth comes from the National Science Foundation, supporting coverage of emerging science, and Stonyfield Farm, organic yogurt and more. Women of Inspiration speak at the Stonyfield Strong Women programs taking place in Boston, New York, and Washington, D.C. Details at stonyfield.com. Support also comes from NPR member stations, the Ford Foundation for reporting on U.S. environment and development issues, and the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation for coverage of Western issues.
This is NPR, National Public Radio.